Welcome to our after-hours segment, Conversations with the Producer, where myself, Adana Moriarty, the producer of Talking Book Publishing, continues the conversation with our guests, hitting them up for more juicy intel into the world of publishing. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so I guess because I just went through this whole process with CLI, what do you think poets need to do to be successful? Not only finish the book, not only get the manuscript, not only get it to that point, what does it take to sell a book as a poet? Because it's different than, if you write sci-fi.
So I have two answers to that question. My first answer is, I think poets need to always read, write, and read, right? So if you read other books of poetry, then it will inspire you, to create what you read. I really feel like writing is a biological process, right? You take something in, something comes out. You breathe in oxygen, you exhale carbon dioxide. So primarily, that reading is what, in my opinion, makes you a part of a community, right? Of authors, because, once you, and then if you start really looking at some of the details, you're going to notice things about the actual writing community. Let's say the book was published by, Red Hen Press. So then you look them up and find out they're an LA publisher that published books. Then you go to the copyright page and you notice the Library of Congress cataloging data. Then you look up the Library of Congress. You're like, what is it, right? Find out it's the largest library in the world and that they have a huge poetry section, right? Then, you find out that the foreword. Say again?
My book is in.
Excellent.
I just cataloged it with the Library of Congress and got my certification letter.
Woo! Right? That's what I'm talking about. So
it's got to be somewhere, right?
Exactly. So then, so the more we read, the more involved and aware of the community we become. So then after that, I say write because, the writing is the exercise that's inspired by the reading. And then the second read, right? Because I said read, write, and read, is to read your poems to people. And that's really how you sell books. You read poems to people. And that is what creates the value in the mind of the other person, right? Because people buy things because value is created in their mind somehow, right? I walk into Ross, right? And I see a watch and I'm like, oh, I want that watch, right? Cause yes, I know what a watch is, but I saw it. that's really what sparked me buying it. So the same thing with poetry. We often buy books of poetry because we heard a poem out of it. We buy an album because we heard a song out of the album. So I'm always encouraging people to read their poetry to as many people as they can, because that's how CLI started. I heard someone reading poetry. I wanted their book, and their book did not exist yet, right? And that's how I buy most of my books. I heard something and I want to have it. So that's my answer.
Well, I think having to read your poems is the scariest part of that.
Yeah.
Before I started this whole process with CLI, I had never read a poem out loud to anybody. Most of the time I wrote them and that was that. I never went back and read them. I didn't edit them. And I will say that, I think the thing that I got out of CLI the most was being able to revise my own poetry, like, well, and force myself into situations where I have to read out loud. but I mean, being able to go back and reread it and be like, oh yeah, this is actually crap. It needs to be edited, instead of like, I did that and I'm moving on to the next. I think that was my biggest journey with CLI. All right. So I want to talk about the library a little bit more. Okay. You guys touched on the library, but the origin stories of the library are such a cool thing. And so I would like for that story to be on our podcast.
Okay. I started the Library of Poetry. It actually began in a suitcase. I bought a suitcase from Ross, and which is a department store in LA, because my students in my poetry class, I required that they read a book of poetry every week, and then they were not doing it. So I decided to ask them, why aren't you reading poetry books? And they were like, we can't find them. They don't have any at the library. I didn't believe that. So I went to the library, the local one, and there was no poetry section. You know, like, and they had no poetry books there, this local branch. So what I did was I put 80 of my own books in a suitcase that I got from Ross. And then I took it to class every Monday night. And I put it on the desk, and then students would like take a book out and put a book in. Right. You know, like the book that they checked out the previous week. One of my students said, oh, this is a little Sims Library of Poetry right here. Right. And I was like, oh, I like that name a lot. So, you know, 3 years later, I learned how to build a bookshelf out of scrap wood. And then I built a little one. And then I looked on one side of my garage, which was totally full of crap. And I was like, I bet you I could build like a wraparound bookshelf. And so me and my brother did that. You know, I put my 300 books on those shelves, and it looked like I only had 10 books. So my birthday was coming up, and I called every poet I knew, and I was like, please come donate books to our little garage poetry library. And at the beginning of that day, we had my 300 books. And by the end of that day, we had 2,000 books of poetry, all from people giving their own little, like, here's my 5, here's my 10 books, here's my 12 books, right? So the whole library itself is, you know, created by poets pooling together their own books, and together we had a library. And so that library was, you know, was there for a year before we were offered a building here on Florence. And so we moved in. Again, me and my brother built a bookshelf, just bigger. And right now we have 6,000 books of poetry. And the library is, you know, really, I would say, funded by the students, you know, who took the classes. You know, we took the tuition and created a library together. And so much of the work that we had to do here was done by students. Like, students painted the library. We went and picked up books, furniture, you know, like, we did everything. And so now we have 6,000 books of poetry of all different types, individual poets, periodicals, anthologies, textbooks, biographies, CDs, DVDs, you know, like so many things, and all of it, you know, basically, you know, people just pooling their time, their money, and their books together, you know, to make what we have here.
So there are plans to expand in the future, right? That's the goal. And you, at the Sims Library of Poetry, you guys just did the 44 Drive, Is that something that's still going on, or is that that's complete? I mean, can people still pledge the $44 a month? And why would they want to pledge $44 a month? Where does that come from?
Yeah, so the library is also funded by individual donors who give $44 a month as a part of the 44 campaign, which is, it is ongoing. We call it the 44 campaign because in 1731, Benjamin Franklin opened the first public library called the Library Company of Philadelphia by getting a bunch of his homies together, and they all put in 44 shillings. And so it was also the first lending library in the world. Like, before that, every other library was referenced. You cannot take the books home. And so they also only bought books that people in their community wanted to borrow, you know. So he really created the first public library, and we decided we would create our library the same way, you know, like asking people to put in 44 that would help sustain the library. And our goal is to get 300 people donating $44 a month. Right now we have 78 people, and those 78 people, though, their contribution pays for the rent, the lights, the gas, the electric, and the internet. So very proud of what they're doing and excited about the day when we cross that 300 mark.
So that the other 223 donors, is that the right math? I'm a poet. I'm not a mathematician. would cover things like staff salary and being able to host events and things like that, right?
Yeah, the programming, you know, and the other resources and classes that we offer to the community. That's what the other donations would cover.
Well, I think your journey with the library is it's so fascinating to me. I mean, just that you grew it from your own 80 books to over 6,000 now, and having seen the tentative plans for the future, you know, I encourage everybody to donate to this project because it's special. And, you know, we as poets are, I don't know, we're underrepresented. And, you know, that was the other thing that, I mean, I've gotten from like the entire community lit program is, a community that I didn't ever know that I was a part of because I was a private poet and I'd never shared it. And, you know, being able to be in the part of like, you know, bringing representation and letting our voices be heard and, all of that, like you did that. Like you have created something with both the library and CLI that's really special, I think, that, you know, and I know that it makes you extra busy.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, like, I just feel like CLI exists to serve writers, you know, like to serve poets. So it is true that, you know, that it does create more work. And, but I would say, you know, people show up to help do the work, you know, like they put their shoulder to the wheel and we do the work together. Yeah.
Okay. So if people want to donate to the library, they go to the simslibrary.com.
Yeah. Simslibraryofpoetry.org.
Close.
You were close. You were very close. And they could click on.
If they want more information, they go to communitylit.org. You know, if they want to join the poetry program. I was one of the first class that was held not in person. We had four classes for almost 60 people. Is that about, which normally it's like one class for 15 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So some good things come out of pandemic life. And I am waiting for my book because I wasn't at the in-person author draft and I have been checking my mailbox every day.
It's on the way. It's on the way.
Is it? I'll believe it when my mailbox tells me so.
Okay.
Well, Hiram, I really appreciate your time today and hanging out and chatting. And I look forward to seeing you in November at the 805 Writers Conference. And, you know, hopefully we have contact before that.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thank you both. Appreciate y'all.
Talking Book Publishing and our After Hours segment, Conversations with the Producer, are brought to you by writersandpublishersnetwork.com and WPNwebinars.com. We hope you are enjoying our podcast. Reach out to us if there's anything that you would like us to cover on future podcast episodes.